in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And that's a penalty!
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free steak.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX. By Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. And by BetUS, the original online sportsbook. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Patrick Creighton.
This is the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you, 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN on the John B. Listener line, on the text line, on the X Twitter at P. Creighton1. Big Johnny B.
Big Bad John.
On the other side of the glass at the Master Controls at Third Coast, Johnny on the X Twitter. On the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN975.com, ESPN975 app. Tell Google, tell Alexa, play ESPN975 and take us with you everywhere you go because you know you wanna. Today is a bittersweet day on Late Hits. Very bittersweet. Today, say goodbye to a longtime producer of this show. This is the final Late Hits for Big Johnny B. Johnny is leaving us. He is moving on to corporate America. He's going on to put on a suit and tie, go work 9 to 5, and bring home some bike. And this is his last day on the show. It's his last day with us, and wanted to take a minute here just to appreciate you. Man, you've been a part of this show since its very beginning over 5 years ago. That's how, man, Late Hits been on for 5 years. You've been a part of this show in some way, shape, or form for 5 years. And always done a terrific job. Always been a valued member of this show and this team. And we're going to miss you, brother. We're going to miss you. I want to make sure I showed you a little appreciation, brought you a few different cakes.
Yes, you did.
Got you a nice 9% ABV.
Can't wait to drink that tonight.
I'm sure you will enjoy very much because it is quite amazing. And hope that you will enjoy those. He's going to drink that after the show, not during it.
Exactly.
Just because, you know, if it's a 9% ABV, you want to sit back and enjoy that. You're not trying to chug that bad boy. You're trying to enjoy it. I'm going to drink it at a nice solid pace. I'm going to taste every drop of it. But this is John's last day on the show. So you are encouraged to give us a call at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. And give your well wishes to one of the longtime producers of this show.
Thank you for the kind words, Patrick.
Man, it's going to be weird without you around here. You know, we always had you on. Like, I mean, you were pretty much like once a week, you were always a part of the show.
Yeah.
And like we always talked about, like a week in advance, we'd be talking about what we're going to do. And it's, it's kind of, it's bittersweet.
It is bittersweet. I'm going to miss coming in here and doing it. I mean, we've worked together even longer than that, going to the network days on the other side. So it is bittersweet, but I suspect at some point
down the line here,
I'll be back.
How long have you been with Gal Media? Because I feel like you and I were paired together on the network.
Yeah.
Like from the very beginning. How long have you been here?
Well, I interned for a year and a half, and then I've been hired on for almost 6 years.
So when did you start interning here?
2018, I believe, or 2017, somewhere in there. At the end, I think it was the beginning of 2018.
Okay, yes, because in 2018, I was still doing network and Late Hits. So
yeah, you were.
I just literally go from one studio and just run right into the other. So, man, it's going
to
be...
We've also worked together the opposite way, where you came over here and did Late Hits, and then we met on that side from midnight till 3 a.m. for a stretch, too.
So originally, I did Late Hits, and then I went on to the network from 9 to midnight. Then, I did the network from 3 to 7 and then came here from 7 to 9. Then it wound up being where I would do here 7 to 9 and then go over to the network from midnight to 3 a.m. Now I've managed to get this down to just one show and not running back and forth between studios and not working until 3 or 4 a.m., which does make my sleep patterns better, makes my daughter happier because, as I would later learn, she would not sleep until I got home. So she would wait for me to get up. So it was kind of – I didn't even realize that she would do that until one day she's like, I'm like, honey, why are you so tired? And my daughter's just like, Dad, I can't sleep until you get home. And I'm like, for real? And she's like, yeah. I said, how long has this been going on? She's like, a year. And that's when I realized, like, all right, I can't do this. I can't do this to her. So, we got phone calls already. Look at that. You know, I mean, I don't want to bag on the other shows that they don't get calls in the first 5 minutes of their show. But we take every phone call that comes into this show. And right now, our buddy Tony in Houston. What's going on, Tony?
What is going on, my brother? How are you?
Man, I'm feeling pretty good. Just had a little bit of cake as we're celebrating Johnny's last day.
The other night when you were on the air and you were like, you hit all the nicknames and then you had to go back and go, oh, well, it's the Yankees. It's this. I was hysterical to myself. But listen, man, your boy, I'm going to miss you, my brother. I'm going to miss you a lot. He never failed to get me on in an almost immediate fashion. He played Thunderstruck whenever I wanted. he just did his gig the best ever. And I don't know who can replace you, my brother. But, you know, I wish you the best in what you're doing. And I hope it is a big push forward move and a big blessing in your life for you and your family. And, you know, I really wish you the best. And sorry, it's all about him tonight. So, you know, it was tough to watch us walk away from the World Series, but I am going to miss you, my brother. And I love you very much. And thank you for everything and all of the phone calls and the songs and everything.
Man, I appreciate that call, Tony. I know Johnny does too. Man, see, I'm glad that Tony called because I wanted to make sure that you understand. Sometimes being the producer, you are the unheralded hero of the show, right?
Oh, yeah.
All the attention is focused on the host. Good, bad, everything is focused on the host. And the producer usually winds up, you know, in the background, not necessarily appreciated by the audience as much for all the work that they do because all that work is behind the scenes. It's not on the microphone. So a lot of it goes on air, but it's not necessarily all, you know, on the microphone or him voiced out directly. I just wanted to see people appreciate you, Johnny B. People appreciate you. They like you. They respect you. They know the hustle.
I feel appreciated. Hey, it's a rough hustle being behind the scenes. I do prefer it that way, but yeah, you don't get as much. It's like a manager. You don't get as much grind as, or you don't get as much credit as you should when you win, and you get too much credit if you lose.
It's like
or
a quarterback.
You get blamed too much if you. Yeah. Oh yeah.
You're the quarterback, Johnny B. Felt like I don't want to feel like Dak Prescott right now. Because when they win, well. It's not his fault they won. They won in spite of it. When they lose, damn Dak!
Yep.
It's all his fault.
You know, a lot of stuff goes wrong that we can't control, but we get blamed for every single bit of it.
Somebody on the text line is advocating for us to get rid of a different producer, and I shall not name that because that is incorrect.
No
that
comment.
That is inappropriate. But wanted us to get rid of a different producer and keep Big Bad John. See? The people loves you. They loves you. They love you. We're going to do it the proper. We're going to get the right gimmick for that. They love you. You know, I love Dusty Baker when he first got hired. Thought it was a great move. Was one of the few people in this city who stood up and defended that hire relentlessly when he first got hired. And people were yelling and screaming all kinds of nonsense and still buying into the false narrative that, you know, Dusty destroyed the careers of Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor, which factually inaccurate. But I love Dusty was the right man for the job at the right time. And I think Dusty is a future Hall of Famer. But I got to tell you, I am very disappointed in the way he's going out. And I don't mean I'm disappointed because, you know, the Astros lost in Game 7 of the LCS or because they got their asses kicked twice at home. I'm not talking about that. Dusty Baker, who entered baseball in 1968 at 19 years old, at a time when baseball players of color still faced a lot of racism, open, angry racism. And Dusty always talked about Buck O'Neill and Jackie Robinson and Hank Aaron as guys he looked up to, guys who he considered, you know, mentors and big brother. He played under Buck O'Neill. He played with Hank Aaron. And you think about the abuse that those men took in their careers, and none of them ever used it as an excuse. None of them ever used it to whine about, complain about, etc. And Dusty, who had never done that really previously, now on his way out the door for the Astros, whining and crying about the media, whining and crying about fans, kicking the media and fans on his way out the door, it is so beneath him. Not to mention, directly contradicts what he said at his own press conference on when he was leaving, when he talked about this is something he'd been thinking about since the offseason, that, hey, you know, as long as we kept winning, I'd keep going, but eventually it was going to end, and that's when it would end. Here is Dusty Baker. Most recent comments on a Steam Room podcast with Charles Barkley and Ernie Johnson, talking about how the bloggers and the tweeters helped push him into retirement.
You know, every year is different. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of, like, criticism from 30-year-olds and bloggers and tweeters, and I'm not doing this, and I don't know that. And I told my wife, I said, you know, I'm kind of tired of this and tired of scrutiny.
I think it's embarrassing for a man of Dusty's stature, a man of Dusty's accomplishments, to be crying about social media. And I'm so tired of social media second guessing me. What Dusty's really trying to say he's tired of, but he can't say this, is he's tired of not being able to get along with his general manager because he couldn't get along with James Click and he couldn't see eye to eye with Dana Brown. He's tired of the research and development department, the analytics department, trying to tell him who he should and shouldn't be playing in certain matchups that he didn't want to deal with. Dusty want to do it his way, and analytics be damned. And Dusty wanted to, you know, would love to go at all the guys in the locker room who were feeding stories to the media about division on the team, and he's got a beef with Chaz McCormick, and, you know, why does he keep force feeding Rafael Montero? That's really where Dusty's beef is. And the reality is, Dusty, if you had done a better job this season of giving your team the best chance to win night in and night out, instead of giving career minor leaguers almost the same number at bats as your number one offensive prospect, and the career minor leaguer didn't even play on the team for 2 months. If you had done a better job of managing your bullpen and not insisting on going to a guy who couldn't get outs for a month and a half, if you had done a better job of getting your number one offensive prospect more than 47 at-bats in 2 months, when the GM gave you an extra catcher on the roster, if you had done a better job managing your team, maybe there would not have been such conflict between you and the general manager. Maybe there would not have been such conflict between you and the analytics and the R&D department. Maybe there would not have been such conflict in the locker room among guys who, you know, want to win baseball games, but you're trotting out soft lineups because you're going to play who you're going to play, and that's it. Numbers be damned. How many times did we have to see Dusty praising Martin Maldonado every time a pitcher pitched well? And if that pitcher didn't pitch well, you know what? Jenna Diaz's fault. And yeah, if we'd have had Moldy in there. He did such a disservice to Jenna Diaz this year. Absolute disservice. And all his, oh, well, you know, he's going to thank me one day. No, he's going to thank you for screwing him out of Rookie of the Year. That's what he's going to thank you for. You decided Maldi's your guy. Damn the numbers. Damn the evidence. And your team paid for it. Your team paid for it. How many games did the Astros lose this year that they probably should have won if Dusty hadn't gone to Montero time and time again in May? If Dusty put up a lineup that could actually hit at any time while you didn't have Yordan Alvarez and you didn't have Jose Altuve and you didn't have Michael Brantley. No, you're going to leave the bats on the bench. Let's keep playing Jake Myers. 309 at-bats for Jake Myers. 298 at-bats for Corey Jolks. Yiner had 355 at-bats. And he was the number one hitting prospect in the organization. You know why you always hear teams don't bring up their star prospects to sit them on the bench? Because that is just a baseball fact. As a truism. All right, there's no reason to bring a guy up if he's a star prospect and put him on the bench. The whole reason you bring him up is because you're trying to play him. Nobody develops at 23 and 24 by sitting on the bench and watching guys in their mid-30s who can't hit a beach ball on a sunny day. These are the reasons why a team that had the aspirations it had a lot of frustrations. Everybody except the manager understood this team did not pitch as well as it did a year ago. This team did not play defense as well as it did a year ago. But Dusty wanted to manage like it was the same team. The only guy in baseball who didn't figure out the Astros needed to win by scoring because they weren't going to win by holding you to one run anymore. The only guy in baseball who couldn't figure that out was Dusty Baker. And if fans or social media people or bloggers are too much for you to handle, all of a sudden, after everything you dealt with in your career some really disgusting racial stuff because bloggers second-guessing you are too much for you to handle, then it was time for you to go. It was a great career. I have a lot of admiration for everything that Dusty did as a player and as a manager. But if you're going to go with bloggers and social media pushed me out the door, then it was already long past time for you to go. Before we hit the break, got to tell you about our friends at Iron 24 Fitness and Recovery, because I think it's awesome that you could get a gym that has 24/7 access. I think it's awesome to have a gym that is not going to try to lock you into some nonsense contract or bang you over the head with hidden fees. I think it's awesome to have a gym that I don't have to go in and go through this whole sales process and talk to somebody behind a desk that wants to try to milk me for every possible upsell they can. Oh, while you're here, do you want to buy this $9 drink and, you know, this $30 cream? And, oh, hey, you know, we've got some personal training sessions that I'll sell to you for $300 each. And, all right, now let me parade you around the gym as the newbie. Yeah, you don't have to deal with any of that. Because Iron 24 is a totally new kind of gym. It's 100% digital. It's app-based membership. You join fast on the app, and you start working out right away. No tours, no sales calls, no appointments, no BS. Every Iron 24 facility has high-quality cardio, machines, free weights, and their signature recovery rooms with infrared saunas. You're going to like those, by the way. Right now, for a limited time, Iron 24 locations are offering new member ESPN listeners 2 weeks free and zero down when you join on the Iron 24 app. So what are you waiting for? Go to iron24.com/ESPN. That's iron24.com/ESPN. Get started today. Go to iron24/ESPN, iron24.com/ESPN, Iron 24 Fitness and Recovery.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of Odin Finch.
Odin Finch.
I'm Odin Finch.
Well, the priority right now is to take care of some of the bullpen help that we're losing. So we got to, you know, try to find that. We're going to find some bullpen help. If we can do that, you know, it may be from within, but we're going to have to replace, you know, Maton, Neris, and we also have Stanek. You know, we have to replace those kind of guys. I think the core of our bullpen is still intact. I think the rotation is still intact. I think at the end of the day, you know, we're going to have to get a backup catcher for Diaz because, you know, Diaz is going to be the main guy next year. And so, you know, we got some of our work cut out, but we have a lot of good pieces in place here, and we're still set up to win.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5, presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical Rx, by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology, and by MedUS, the original online sports book. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
You just heard from Astros General Manager Dana Brown talking about the Astros offseason plans, and he sounded pretty clear and concise. He does not expect Phil Maton, Ryan Stanek, or Hector Neris back with the team next year. Now, Neris has a player option that he's expected to opt out of and go back on the market and get a multi-year deal with some significant money. And, well, the Astros aren't going to go out and sign that kind of guy when they already signed that guy in Montero. So they're not going to have another guy like that unless they're looking at a potential closer-ish type of player. Like, you'd give that kind of money to Josh Hader. You're not going to give that money to Hector Neris. Stanek and his control problems, his wildness, Phil Maton, doesn't sound like they're going to be back. You heard Dana say they need a backup catcher because Yiner is going to be the guy next year. Dana wanted Yiner to be the guy this year. But I would not expect Martin Maldonado back because the it can never be Yiner's team as long as Maldi is here. And considering Maldi gives you nothing offensively and nothing defensively, it's time to move on. When you have a young catcher like Yiner Diaz, you want a backup guy. If you're going the inexpensive backup guy route, you want a backup guy who is an elite defensive catcher. You want your Charlie O'Brien, right? You want your Eduardo Perez. Your late career Tony Pena. You're not looking for a guy who's a below average defender. And at this point in his career, that's what Maldi is. It sounds like they are not willing to roll the dice with Michael Brantley again. Okay, I understand that part. I mean, he missed 5+ months. And then, threw a guy, made a throw to home plate and then missed a week. And it was sad to see Uncle Mike really struggle in a postseason. And he's going to turn 37 next season. I think they want to find a guy to share left field and DH with Yordan who's going to have a lot more power than what Brantley's bringing to the table at this point. By the way, Jorge Soler opted out of his deal in Miami. He'd be a perfect guy to go chase down as a big-time power threat. I do remember him hitting one out of the damn building. He'd be a really good guy to have in left field DH sharing that time with Yordan. Oh, also Blind Madris, free agent, not expected to return. We will miss him so. But that means they're going to be on the hunt for a lot of pen help. Because your pen right now is Presley, Abreu, Montero. Some minor league guys. And Dana says, well, the core of the bullpen is together. Well, Presley, Abreu, and Montero, that's the core of your bullpen. Sure, they're together. I don't think we're considering Seth Martinez part of the core of the Astros bullpen. Pretty sure that's not exactly what he meant. Do about some of the other options that are in the Astros pen at this point that are in-house. Brandon Belak? Ronel Blanco walks everybody. Kendall Graveman got another year in his deal, right? I feel like Kendall Graveman may have another season. I think he might still be here. Johnny, do you know off the top of your head Kendall Graveman? I want to say he's got another season.
No, I was looking it up right now.
He does. He's got another year at $8 million. So Graveman's got another year. So there's a fourth guy. So essentially you got four relievers that are part of your actual bullpen. We're not counting the Parker Mashinskis and the Enoli Paredes and the Bennett Sousas of the world. You got four guys in your pen. You need three more. As like a major league level, and then after that, you need some depth behind them because guys get hurt. So they're gonna need to buy some arms. I think they need a, you know, they need a backup catcher. And look, backup catcher, you can always find a backup catcher. There's always somebody who has a backup catcher that they're willing to trade and probably eat money on. Backup catchers are not expensive to sign in free agency. That shouldn't be a too difficult of a deal for them to handle. And, you know, they need a left field slash DH guy to share left field with Yordan. And they need to let Jazzy play center field and leave him the bleep alone. And number one issue, stop effing with Jazz McCormick. I thought, like, you know, like Jazz's defense in center field, he was worth 5 defensive runs saved, and he only played 50-some-odd games in center field. I know I had looked this up previously when they had announced the gold gloves for, like, who was going to be nominated for the gold glove, and Julio Rodriguez was nominated for a gold glove in center field. And I was like, how? And you go and look up, and Julio Rodriguez was worth -5 defensive run saved, above average. -5. And -4 per 1,200 innings. But he's nominated for Gold Glove. Chaz was +5 in like a third of the games. Chaz is a better center fielder than he is left fielder. Because in center field, his range plays more into it. Chaz doesn't have a great arm. But he can go run anything down. I mean, we did see that firsthand in the World Series a year ago against Philadelphia. Chaz can run anything down. And he certainly takes better routes to baseballs in center field than Mauricio Dubon does. I don't care. Oh, Dubon's got a stronger arm. Chaz tracks the ball better. Job one, catch it. So I'd like to see them just play Chaz. I mean, think about this for a moment, right? If you took a look at all the center fielders in baseball and what guys, you know, what guys who played center field did offensively. And then you look at Chaz's numbers and the fact that, you know, the number of at-bats that he had, and you're like, man, Chaz put up numbers like a top 10 center fielder. Again. And can't seem to get, you know, proper respect. I mean, among center fielders, he was 6th in RBI, only had 403 at-bats. The only guy who had more RBI and less at-bat, and about the same at-bats, is Cedric Mullin, had 74, and he had 404 at-bats. And he bats in the middle of the lineup, and Chaz batted, you know, at the bottom of the lineup. You know, Chaz had 22 homers. Guys who had more homers in center field. Louis Robert had 38, and it is a giant career outlier. Rodriguez at 32. Cody Bellinger at 26. Jack Sawinski had 25. Jose Siri had 25, and he hit 222 with a 267 on base. Good thing he hit homers because, I mean, 267 on base? Are you kidding me? How the hell are you in the majors? Brandon Nimmo had 24. James Outman had 23. The only guy who had less at-bats than Chaz was Siri. Everybody else had a good number more at-bats. If Chaz can hit 22 and 403 at-bats, how many can he hit with 570? 28? 30? Could you have 30 home run hitter in right field in Kyle Tucker, in center field in Chaz McCormick, and then in left field with Yordan Alvarez and maybe Jorge Soler? You'd have four guys who all hit at least 30 homers. That would be pretty cool. You got a catcher who certainly could hit 30 home runs if he, I don't know, maybe got 450 at-bats. You actually have a ton of power. Play the right guys. Play it.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sweet Sassy Molassy.
Penguin goalie Peter Skudra says, "Hey, try not to shoot that puck up my pooper. I'll shoot the puck anywhere I want. And if that happens to be in your pooper, so be it."
Late night Houston sports talk only happens here. It's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical Rx. By Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. And by MedUS. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
You know, there's an old saying traces back to former President Andrew Jackson. To the victor go the spoils. I believe that was even on a statue of Andrew Jackson way back in the day. That was his moniker. And the Arlington Junk Grabbers, they won the World Series, so they get the spoils. That means they get to say what they want, do what they want, you know, rock out with their very small Mas Pequeñas roosters out. But they get to do all those things because they won. And congratulations on beating the 84-win Diamondbacks, because Arizona would have been the team with the second fewest wins in the regular season to ever win a World Series. 84 wins. So congratulations. They really beat a tough opponent to win the World Series. But they, you know what? They beat the Rays, beat the Orioles, they beat the Astros, they beat the Astros two games in a row in Minute Maid, down 3-2. So they get to crow and do all they want. All I'm saying is, if I just won World Series, first World Series in franchise history, I'd be crowing like crazy, but I'd be crowing about me, and I would not be making any references to other teams or things that players of other teams said, because I'm not trying to give them any shine. I'm trying to have my own shine. I might want to be a little original. I might want to, you know, say something profound or, you know, memorable. But Corey Seager decided to let the whole world know that after winning the World Series, the most important thing on his mind was Alex Bregman.
"I just got one thing to say. You know, everybody was wondering what would happen if the Rangers didn't win the World Series. I guess we'll never know."
Now, to be fair to Corey Seager, who is a terrific player, if he hadn't been hurt this year, he might have been in the MVP conversation. And it is his second World Series MVP. The guy's a great player. But zero people asked, well, what happens if they're, like, zero people. It was a big storyline. What if the Astros don't win the division? Because for a while there, whoever didn't win the division looked like they were going to be the final wild card in. And that, you know, if you didn't win the division, you might not make it because, you know, the Rays and the Jays, you know, only one team was going to get in a wild card maybe from the West. And, you know, if you didn't win the division, well, what if, you know, the team like the Mariners, who got really hot in August and early September, what if they passed you? You know, what if you won 88 games and didn't make it? You're the defending world champions. If you didn't win the division, you might only be the sixth seed. That was like an actual narrative. There was never a narrative of, well, what if the Rangers don't win? Because the truth is, nobody expected the Rangers to win. They won 68 games last year. And they've spent $1.5 billion over the last two off seasons. And they went out and traded for everybody under the sun. And had the fourth highest payroll in baseball for a reason. They spent it. Like drunken sailors, they spent it. Now, credit to them, they spent it on the right guys. Mitch Garver was definitely a better signing than, say, like a Gary Sanchez. They got some terrific young players in Josh Young and Nathaniel Lowe, Jonah Heim. They spent a gazillion dollars on Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. Adolis Garcia had the best season of his career. I mean, Nate Eovaldi had the best season of his career. They, you know, for the most part, with the exception of, say, Jacob deGrom, because as I told everybody in the offseason, didn't want the Astros to sign him because his arm was going to fall off. And, well, his arm fell off. The Met fan knows about the Met guy. you got to give the junk grabbers credit. They won. But, bro, that's the best you could come up with. I only got one thing to say. You had all the time from the end of the World Series to now to think up something, and that's all you got. That's pretty damn weak. For as good a player as Corey Seager is, I expected more, right? I expected more. I expected him to let his personality shine, not Alex Bregman owns my soul, and I need to make sure that he knows that I'm thinking about him. And it's not the first time the junk grabbers were all obsessed about anything and everything Astros, because we watched their general manager, Chris Young, have a freaking meltdown on television because Brian McTaggart from MLB.com, who covers the Astros, cracked a joke about, well, maybe if, the Rangers weren't celebrating so hard making the playoffs, they wouldn't have come out and laid an egg, virtual zero egg, on the last day of the season to blow the division. And you'd have think somebody ran over Chris Young's dog the way he whined and cried about Brian McTaggart. Seriously? How freaking soft. How kid brotherish. Kid brother always has to be the aggrieved party against big brother Astros. You won a World Series, you're still playing the aggrieved party. You're soft. You're freaking soft. And then he's like, we had a very subdued celebration. Bro, your freaking RSN channel, your Bally Sports Texas, is showing pictures and video of your celebration going, it's lit, and everybody subdued my ass. The internet always remembers. They are so concerned about everything Astros. You just won, and you're still the kid brother trying to be the aggrieved party. Enjoy your freaking win, you idiots. You don't know when that next one might come. I mean, hell, you're not even an original Texas franchise. You're the Washington Senators. You didn't move here until 1971. All right, I'm 50 years old. You guys went longer than that before you win your first title. It might be a while before it happens again. Ask the New York Rangers. In 1994, they won the Stanley Cup. It was their first one since 1940. They're still looking for their first one since 1994. It might be a long time. I'm just saying. Doesn't have to be everything. Oh my God, the Astros is so mean to us. Oh my God, the Astros. Just be your own team. Like, it's okay to be your own man. At some point, every kid brother eventually becomes like their own man. And you no longer live in your big brother's shadow. If that's the only line you have, it like doesn't even really apply to you. But that's the only line you have. You're basically admitting you still live in big brother's shadow. Again, I'm not taking away what they accomplished because they won. I said, go party your asses off. They had a nice little parade around Arlington. Yeah. I like how they're talking about like, oh, well, our jersey says Texas. We represent the whole state. No, y'all are just so damn arrogant. You think Dallas represents the whole state and you don't even play in Dallas. It's like, well, we can't think of a good name, but Texas Rangers. We're going to be law enforcement. Like, you know, you're athletes, right? Said the best thing you guys could have done was celebrate the only way you know how. Grab each other's junk. I mean, hell, no other team celebrates by grabbing junk like the team in Arlington. You might as well own it. I mean, it's way better than what their minor leagues team do, where they're basically forcing an underage teammate to perform for other teammates on the team because, well, I mean, that's crime. So you know what? I hope that they enjoy their championship because every fan base deserves to see a championship. I can tell you that, you know, as a Knicks fan, I've never seen the Knicks win a title. The last time the Knicks won a title was the month before I was born. And like I said, I'm 50. 50 years they haven't won. And as long as James Dolan owns the team, they're never going to win. So it's pretty much that until somebody makes him sell that team, the Knicks are doomed. I got a way better shot of seeing the Rockets win than I do of seeing the Knicks win. And, you know, if you're a Rockets fan and maybe, you know, you weren't really old enough to appreciate the back-to-back titles in 94 and 95. I certainly didn't appreciate them because one of them came at my team's cost. And then the second one came against the team that was probably inferior to my team, but, you know, Patrick Ewing finger roll. By the way, is there anybody in the history of sports less clutch than Patrick Ewing? Did anybody ever guarantee victory and fail as often as Patrick Ewing did? Like it was like a running joke in New York. If Ewing guaranteed a win, we accepted we were going to lose. When Mark Messier guaranteed a win, the Rangers won. When Patrick Ewing guaranteed a win, the Knicks lost every damn time. And the reality is, of all those teams, the Knicks' best team was the 93 team. They were up 2-0 on the Bulls. And they lost in six. That was the Knicks' best team. You know, the Astros' best team was probably 2019. That 2019 team was probably their best ever. And people talk about wanting to bring A.J. Hinch back. He's why they lost. Hey, I know I got Gerrit Cole, who, you know, could legitimately be Cy Young, struck out over 300 dudes. Give me Harris. Yeah. I remember that, AJ. I remember that. I did hear people talking about Craig Counsell. Look, Craig Counsell's a great manager. I mean, the Milwaukee Brewers are an extremely constrained financial team. They are the smallest market in baseball. And that guy has won with openers and bullpen games and the fact that a guy who once upon a time was an MVP now suddenly can't hit for beans, Christian Yelich. And he kept winning. I think that he's going to go to the Mets where, you know, his former boss, David Stearns, is. I mean, if they weren't going to hire Joe Espada and they hired Craig Counsell, zero complaints. I just think it's got zero chance of happening.
Is Espada your first choice?
I think he should be the first choice. Because, again, just like with James Click, they weren't trying to change the message. They weren't trying to change the ideology. They were just trying to change the personality. With Dusty leaving, they're not trying to change the message or change the ideology of the team. They just want somebody who's going to cooperate better. James Click didn't cooperate, didn't manage his relationships well his final year. Dusty didn't cooperate, didn't manage his relationships very well his last year. And I think Spot will be a lot better at that. We know Council's good at that. You know, Walt Weiss would be good at that. He's, you know, the Braves bench coach and obviously has a relationship with Dana. But for as long as the spot has been here through A.J. Hinch, through Dusty Baker, now through his third general manager, I mean, he has stayed when he could have had jobs elsewhere. So I feel like Espada has done the time and paid his dues and deserves the chance. Late hits.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. We control the spice.
The worm is the spice. The spice is the worm.